VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. As, ladies and gentlemen, our attention is drawn today to the nation of Israel. Vice President Mike Pence has been there the last couple days following President Trump's announcement to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Israel's capital city, Jerusalem. Soon, Israel's Prime Minister is going to be meeting with President Trump in Switzerland, and part of the conversation involves the Iran nuclear deal. Meanwhile, there's some pretty tough relations going on between the United States and the Palestinian Authority, as they are reported to be suspended at this point. Well, discussing all of these issues, we're going live to Jerusalem today, where we have standing by David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. That's the region of Samaria known as, to much of the world, as the West Bank. He is a founder and president of Shiloh Israel's Children's Fund, which was established to heal the trauma of terror victim children after he and his three-year-old son were seriously wounded in a terror attack. He's author of some five books, including The Islamic Tsunami, A Peace for Peace in the New Middle East, More Sparks from Zion. His websites are ShilohIsraelChildren.org and DavidRubinIsrael.com. David, thanks for staying up tonight and joining us here on Crosstalk.
You're welcome, Jim. Good to be with you.
Let's just go back and hear just a brief excerpt from President Trump's statement last month declaring the moving of the U.S. Embassy to Israel's capital. Here's what he had to say.
But today we finally acknowledge the obvious, that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. This is nothing more or less than a recognition of reality. It is also the right thing to do.
David, you're in Israel right now. What was the reaction last month when President Trump made this declaration?
Well, people here are very excited. As President Trump said, he couldn't have said it clearer. When you don't recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, like the head of the Palestinian Authority a few days ago, Mahmoud Abbas, said that there's no Jewish history in Jerusalem.
Mm.
You know, that's like saying that Abraham Lincoln never lived in the White House, or like saying that Washington, D.C. isn't named after George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just totally absurd and totally dishonest. But yes, everyone was excited because this should have been done a long time ago. There have been so many administrations that have just kind of kicked the can down the road and haven't dealt with this basic act of decency, which is to recognize a close ally's country. A close ally can determine for their country what is their capital.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last couple of days, Vice President Mike Pence has been in Israel. He received quite a reception. What was the mood in the country with his arrival?
Well, people were very happy. He was welcomed very warmly. And his speech to the Israeli parliament was a wonderful speech where he spoke about the commonalities that we have in the biblical heritage of our two countries. That the United States is actually a country that was built on biblical foundations, and of course Israel is the original biblical nation. Very warm, very warmly received, and really it was a love fest.
Many thought that it would take up to 4 years for the U.S. to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to your capital in Jerusalem, but Vice President Pence indicated that move would happen next year in 2019. That was a statement that shocked many.
Well, I don't know how many of your listeners are from New York City or have any knowledge about New York City, but when President Trump was not President Trump, when he was the builder, Donald Trump, he managed to do, within a very short amount of time, within I believe it was 4 months, he built the ice skating rink at Rockefeller Center. So he knows how to get things done very quickly, when necessary. And there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to do what Vice President Pence promised, which is to move the embassy to Jerusalem by the end of 2019.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know the vice president stopped both in Egypt and Jordan prior to coming to Israel, but his trip was publicly being boycotted by the Palestinians. Even their Palestinian Authority president, Mahmoud Abbas, was not too complimentary, shouting, "May his house be destroyed." David, was he cursing, or was he issuing some kind of threat?
Well, and you know, there's a third question there. Okay, I mean, it sounded like an Arab curse, just like they're very good at making these curses. They like to make public curses, but if it was a threat, you know, it's kind of interesting. What was he threatening to do? You know, is he threatening to bomb the White House? I mean, is he threatening to send some missiles over at Trump Towers, that, you know, where President Trump lives in, or lived in New York? You know, very crazy kind of talk. But you know, I was actually pleased when he said it, because it's a clarification. It really lets us know what they really believe. And I've always known what they really believe, but this was sort of a bus kind of undressing in front of the world, just letting people know what they're getting.
And quite a contrast to what Abraham was told, that God would bless those who bless him and curse those who curse them, and indeed all the families of the earth would be blessed. Quite a contrast to what was declared to Abraham.
Yes, well, it actually shows the practicality and the reality of the scripture.
Mm-hmm.
That if, you know, those who curse Israel will be cursed. So I imagine that there's actually a tangent to it that says, you know, that would help us to understand that those who curse the friends of Israel will be cursed as well. So if he's cursing President Trump, who is clearly a good friend of Israel's, then he will be cursed as well. And, you know, so I'm not concerned.
We're speaking with David Rubin. He's in Israel right now. And David, since President Trump made his announcement last month, and by the way, this was done with the total blessing and the direction of the Congress, but we understand that the Palestinian Authority has stopped any formal communication with the Trump administration. And so many are asking this question: did President Trump just throw an opportunity for peace out the window by his announcement to move the embassy to Israel's capital?
What kind of opportunity for peace are we talking about? You know, peace has to be placed based on realism. If there's no realism, then you're not going to have peace. You know, it's kind of like saying, you know, President Trump should sit down with Kim Jong-un from North Korea, to sit down and have a chat with him, and there will immediately be peace. You know, it doesn't work that way. Sometimes you have to look evil in the face and confront it. And these are evil people that we're talking about. Mahmoud Abbas is an arch-terrorist, and he's a successor to Yasser Arafat, who is the father of modern terrorism. And so when they talk about Islamic terrorism, yes, Hamas and Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda and ISIS may look more extreme than Abbas, but he, you know, he's an arch-terrorist. He's been funding terrorists, giving thousands of dollars to every terrorist that wounds or kills an Israeli. And if they're thrown in jail, if Israel captures them and they're thrown in jail, then he gives that funding directly to the families of the terrorists. So that's a terrorist by my definition.
Let's talk about the vice president's visit there. He addressed the Knesset, and no sooner did he begin his speech when there was turmoil by the Arab members in the chamber. What transpired?
Well, the Israel is a democracy, and according to our democracy and our laws, it is possible for any citizen of Israel to become a member of the Israeli Knesset or Israeli Parliament. And so there are some Arab members of the Israeli Parliament, 13 out of 120 to be precise, and they created a ruckus when even though the Speaker of the Knesset asked all members of Israel's Parliament to be respectful and everyone should come and be respectful and honor the Vice President of the United States. These 13 Arab Knesset members came and created a total ruckus, heckled him, started yelling at him, and holding up signs, giving their propaganda and their lies about how Jerusalem is the capital of some fictitious place called Palestine. Ridiculous, just ridiculous and outrageous.
So, David, were you encouraged by the vice president's speech, by his visit? Were you encouraged by his address overall? Were the citizens of Israel, were they encouraged by it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As I said, other than those mostly Arab citizens of Israel who, many of whom don't even support the state of Israel, who are just traitors to their country. They're happy to get the social benefits of being Israelis, but they're not willing to stand with their own country. Other than those, everyone else was thrilled. The Jewish Israelis, who comprise more than 80% of the country, were absolutely thrilled from left to right, from, and center, and everything in between. The Jerusalem decision was strongly praised. The Pence visit was strongly welcomed. And I have to tell you, I'm very pleased that at this moment about the strengthening of the relationship between Israel and the United States after those 8 years of trauma with Obama, we here are very pleased.
David Rubin is with us today. We're talking to him in Israel. It is late into the night there. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to explore this Iran deal and even the vice president in a speech before the Knesset talking about the Iran nuclear deal being a disaster. And further, we'll talk about the prime minister of Israel's visit right now to meet with world leaders on issues pertaining to the Iran deal. We'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, as unique as the giraffe is, how did it get its long neck?
Chris, an evolutionary story has it that during drought, those animals with long necks could eat leaves higher up in the trees. They survived while the others went extinct. Even though this story is told and retold in evolutionary circles, it's not even a little bit true. The giraffe has many precise design features to support its body style. For instance, a heart which will pump the blood all the way up to the head, and then traps in the blood vessels to keep the head from exploding when the giraffe puts his head down to drink from the lake. There's much more to a giraffe than just a long neck. Everything about him is designed to be just this. Modern-day giraffes are very well adapted to the environment to fill an ecological niche. They were designed to do so. They did not evolve. And that's how I see it from a back-to-Genesis perspective.
For more on Genesis, visit us on the web at icr.org.
Yes.
speaking to David Rubin, who's in Israel at this very moment. He's a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. That's the region of Samaria known as much as the West Bank to much of the world. And he is here certainly talking about the vice president's trip there. We're talking about the Trump statements. We're talking about also some of the concerns going on pertaining to the nuclear deal and seeing some change take place with that. David, just before we continue on, we know also that you have started what is known as the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, and you operate the website ShilohIsraelChildren.org. Give us a word about that, if you would.
Oh, sure. Well, some years ago, I was wounded in a terrorist attack when I was coming back from Jerusalem with my three-year-old son, who was in the baby seat behind me in the car, and we're halfway home from Jerusalem on our way back to Shiloh, where we live. And there were Islamic terrorists on the side of the road from the Fatah terrorist organization. They were shooting at the car with AK-47 assault rifles. I got shot in the leg. My son was shot in the head. And the bullet that went into his head and through his neck missed his brainstem by 1 millimeter. And we almost were trapped there. The terrorists were still shooting. I tried to start the car 5-6 times. Finally, the car started. I got away from the terrorists, and we got to safety. And we survived. We survived, miraculously. We survived that attack. And as a result of that, I started the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund for the purpose of healing the trauma of the terror victim children and rebuilding the biblical heartland of Israel through those children. So that's where I'm involved in, what we're involved in here, and here in the biblical heartland of Israel, we've built a magnificent therapeutic educational campus where children can be healed from the trauma of terrorism and any other trauma of war, trauma from other issues as well. So we have people standing with us around the world, including some in Wisconsin, Florida, Minnesota, New York, even California and many other states. So I want to encourage your readers, your viewers and listeners, to go to the website, which is ShilohIsraelChildren.org. Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O-H, IsraelChildren.org. And look up the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, see what we're doing here, and it's a great way to partner with Israel.
Again, folks, that's ShilohIsraelChildren.org. David, we understand that on Monday, a boss arrived in Brussels, capital of Belgium. He was there on an official visit, and he's urging the European Union to officially recognize the state of Palestine. Are we about to enter another clash with European Union nations on this? Will we see success on his part in getting such a declaration?
Well, I think that he may get a few European countries to support him, but ultimately everyone knows that there is no mediator in the Middle East other than the United States. That's going to be taken seriously by anybody. Even Russia said that they're happy to help out with any kind of peace process, but nothing's going to happen if the United States is not involved.
Hmm. Yeah, I think Russia was trying to take her place doing that.
Yeah, everyone thought they would. At least Abbas thought that Russia was going to jump in and be happy to take over, but they're not. I mean, they are realistic. Putin, for all of his bravado, is realistic, and he understands that the United States is the only realistic mediator in the Middle East.
Let's talk about the Prime Minister's trip. Benjamin Netanyahu traveled to Switzerland yesterday to attend the World Economic Forum. He's meeting with a number of world leaders. He's going to be meeting sometime with President Trump. What's on the mind of the Prime Minister? What do we know that he's hoping to accomplish?
Well, as you know, these conferences are a great opportunity for world leaders to get together. Yes, they're speaking mainly about economic issues, which is the Prime Minister Netanyahu's specialty, actually. He's actually a graduate of MIT, and he's done wonders for the Israeli economy, which was really struggling greatly before he came in. And he's encouraged Israeli private initiative and creativity. And he's been doing a great job as far as the economy goes. In terms of foreign policy and diplomacy, obviously he wants to meet with different world leaders and let them know what Israel can offer them and what they can offer Israel. And the truth is, Israel has a lot to offer all of these countries. Mm-hmm. And I hope that Europe will come around. I mean, as far as Israel having its capital city, Jerusalem, recognized, we're happy to see that the United States took the lead. But we already have another country, which is Guatemala, and several Latin American countries that are very interested in recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and so we may have some announcements coming soon.
Mm-hmm. Jerusalem Online is saying that the Prime Minister is going to be urging France and Germany to change the Iran nuclear deal. From what you've observed, is there a part of the will of these nations to take action on this? We know that the Trump administration has been talking about renegotiating this deal or saying this was no deal at all. Do you have any optimism that France and Germany might do so, or that we could actually see some changes to what was brokered with Iran?
Well, if they think that it might be in their interest, then they might do so. They may do it just to curry favor with the president. But the problem in Europe is that there's a large and growing Muslim population. And they're afraid of that population. They brought them into the country, and they're allowing more and more to come in. So that's one of their major problems. The other problem with the European nations, and when I say European nations, I'm speaking mainly about Western Europe, not Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe, the opinions are and the positions are a little bit different. But in Western Europe, there is also a problem of them thinking that it's going to help their economy, that they can develop this strong economic relationship with Iran, and that somehow everything is going to be peachy dandy. But they're being very nearsighted, because in the long run, if Iran is given more billions and is given more power, and all these crazy ayatollahs in Iran, then the European house is going to come down as well.
Hmm. Describe that turmoil that's going on in Iran right now between the people and the leadership, the Ayatollahs. What's happening? Is it about economic reasons, or is there something more than that taking place?
Well, it's mainly economy. It's mainly that there's a lot of poverty in Iran, because the Ayatollahs are just putting all their funding and all their investment and all their energy into this crazy nuclear weapon program that they're secretly developing. So I mean, that's mainly the issue, but it's more than that. There's a fascination with the West in Iran. We have to remember that before the Iranian Revolution, which they call the Islamic Revolution, back in the late 1970s, Iran was kind of an anomaly in the Muslim world. It was a country that had a reasonable amount of freedom. It was a country that certainly had freedom of religion. There were a lot of Christians there as well. Now, you know, any Christian who tries to teach his faith is going to be thrown in prison. This is this country, Iran, has changed in many ways in terms of who is running the country, but a lot of the people really want freedom. They really like the Western way of life.
Continue to watch the fallout taking place here. I'd like to move to another region, and that is, David, I'm just wondering, if do you have any insight on what's happening with Turkey, Russia, and the Kurds in northwest Syria right now?
Sure. Well, you know, everyone for a long time has spoken about how the Palestinians should be given their own state. As I said earlier, you know, there's no people that deserves to have their own country less than the Palestinians. But the Kurds certainly do deserve to have their own country. And they're living in a region which borders Turkey and Iran and Iraq. You know, there are a lot of Kurds. There's a large Kurd population in all three of those countries. And they're not being given autonomy by any of those countries. There's a lot of friction, and Turkey is trying to wipe them out. It's trying to wipe out the Kurd population. So I would love to see President Trump and his administration give some support to the Kurds, and you know, there could be some clandestine support going on, some covert support, but I think that they need more. They need more assistance because Erdogan, the president of Turkey, is really a Muslim fascist. You know, it's amazing that he's allowed to continue, and you know, part of NATO, and you know. And the European Union has great relations with Erdogan in Turkey. But the fact is that if you look at his beliefs and examine his statements, he's just an Islamo-fascist.
David Rubin with us here today on Crosstalk, and he is in Israel. It's well into the night there, and talking about some of the issues going on. President Trump's declaration, of course, last week, which we have talked about repeatedly. More recently, the vice president's trip to Israel as well. And a matter of fact, David, the vice president made a bold promise saying the United States of America will never allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon. He said the Iran nuclear deal is a disaster.
Yes, he did say that, and President Trump has said it as well. President Trump is insisting that the Iran deal be changed, and he's giving Congress a reasonable amount of time to make that change. But he said he will no longer certify that Iran deal.
Yeah.
And rightly so.
We'll be back in just 1 minute. If you'd like to get online with David Rubin, our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Do you find yourself guilty of committing the same sin over and over again? You confess it, but you find yourself repeating it again. The Bible tells us that we are to mortify or put to death the deeds of the flesh. For believers, this becomes a daily challenge as the internal struggles ensue. Sadly, many fall into repeating patterns of sin and struggle sincerely with knowing how to break free. In the book, Killing Sin Habits, author Stuart Scott addresses the repetitive nature and pattern of sin and the hindrances that keep people from overcoming their sinful habits. He also provides practical insight as to how God, through the work of the Holy Spirit and radical faith, can help you have victory over sin in your life. He addresses the issue of genuine repentance and provides a detailed battle plan for killing sin habits in our lives. The booklet, Killing Sin Habits, is available for a donation of $12 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We've been talking about the Vice President's trip to Israel. Certainly the President's trip to Switzerland, where he will be meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Certainly talking about what is going on with the Iran deal right now. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. David, this year, the State of Israel celebrates the 70th anniversary. Comment on this milestone, especially since so many nations have committed to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, to wipe her off the map. Comment about this significance of the 70th anniversary.
Well, it's very exciting. It's very exciting that we're reaching that point. We're reaching, you know, the jubilee year, the 70th anniversary of the rebuilt, the reestablished sovereign state of Israel, and so we're going to be celebrating every year. We do celebrate Israel's Independence Day, and we're going to celebrate it even greater this year. And the fact that President Trump and his administration took the bold step, I might add, of going ahead and declaring Jerusalem as Israel's capital and promising to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It was a big, bold step by the president. And administration after administration has been saying that they can't do it, that it's going to create rioting, it's going to create total havoc in the Arab world. Well, he did it, and it didn't happen. Things were relatively calm. You had a bunch of statements at the UN and a little bit of shouting. But for the most part, things have been relatively calm because most people don't care about it. Most people in the Arab world that are much more concerned about Iran getting a nuclear weapon and Iran trying to create havoc in the other countries of the Middle East.
Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. David is calling from New Mexico. David, you're on the air.
Yes. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious where Mr. Rubin believes this is going with Erdogan, you know, the whole Iranian involvement. You know, there in Yemen and all over the place, and Israel happened to, you know, bomb places in Syria as they try to set up, you know, military type base or something. I mean, it just is headed for some full blown Middle East war here very soon.
Your thoughts, David?
Oh, I don't know about that. There's been fighting going on in Syria for a long time, And you know, the question is who that Middle East war would be, who would be involved in that Middle East war. Most of the Sunni Muslim countries, and I'll just point out to those of your listeners who may not know, there are two main groupings in the Islamic world. There are the Sunni Muslims and the Shiite Muslims. Iran is a Shiite Muslim country, and Syria, Assad in Syria, is also Shiite Muslim. He's an Alawite, which is like the Shiites. But the Sunni Muslim countries, the conservative ones like Saudi Arabia, are very concerned about Iran, and there are secret contacts between countries like Saudi Arabia with Israel, trying to get Israel to do something militarily about the Iranian nuclear program. And some of the cooperation isn't military cooperation. Some of the cooperation is covert operations, and some of the cooperation goes beyond that. You know, so some of it is just economic cooperation. The whole Iran issue has really opened up the door for cooperation between Arab countries in the Middle East and Israel.
Any follow-up, David, in New Mexico?
No, that was very good. I know that I hadn't thought about that side of it.
Great.
But thank you for your comments.
Great. Sure. Thank you for the call.
My pleasure.
Thank you for the call. We have a couple open lines here at 800-733-9829. Sue in Hermiston, Oregon, you're on the air.
Oh, it is a privilege to speak to you again, Mr. Lubin. You've been in my prayers for a long time. My question is this, I mean you and Israel. My question is this, are we so constantly tolerant with what's going on in the Arab countries? Is it because we need their oil that bad?
Oh, well, part of it has to do with that. You know, that's been an issue for so many years, this whole, you know, the whole issue of the needing the oil. But that's starting to change. That, you know, that's one of the geostrategic issues that's starting to change. Mm-hmm. Israel has become an exporter of natural gas. There have been a lot of natural gas finds here in Israel in recent years. And Israel has also found some oil. So that is gradually changing. And the United States, of course, President Trump came in, and he is opening up the whole energy field in the United States, which has been repressed for so many years, for certainly the 8 years of Obama and to some extent even before that. So I think the oil issue is going to decrease, and I also, you heard what I said a moment ago about Saudi Arabia looking to Israel for cooperation, and that's nothing short of a revolution. I don't know how long it's going to last. We do have some serious differences between fundamentalist Muslims and Israel. But, you know, survival, you know, the art of survival demands, you know, kind of strange partnerships, and this is one of them.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate the call. David, why? We see all the chaos, the havoc, the threats going on. Why are Palestinians so opposed to Israel building? What is it that is causing the contention there? Help us understand what's happening there on the ground.
Okay, well, just a very, very brief history, okay? Please don't tune out when I say the word history. You know, sometimes say history, people think of those boring textbooks mm-hmm. that they use in so many public schools. But you need a little history to really understand the Middle East. And it's like this. 2,000 years ago, Israel was exiled from its land by the Romans. Okay, the Roman invaders who took over the country, and they drove all the Jews from the land of Israel, scattered us around the world, and at that point they renamed the land Palestina, giving it a Roman derivative to the word Philistines, who were the arch enemies of Israel at that time. Somehow the name Palestina stuck, and then about 600 years later, 1400 years ago to be more precise, the Muslim religion started, but they weren't calling themselves Palestinians. Nobody was calling themselves Palestinians except for maybe the remnant of the Jews who were living here in the land of Israel, and then. In 1948, the State of Israel was reestablished. In 1967, we recaptured the biblical heartland of Judea and Samaria and Eastern Jerusalem. And at that point, around that time, the Arabs, realizing that they're not going to be able to drive all the Jews into the sea anymore unless they come up with a new strategy, they created this people that they're calling the Palestinian people, They said that all the Arabs who live in the land of Israel, specifically in Judea and Samaria and eastern Jerusalem, are what they call Palestinians, and that these people are the indigenous people here in this part of the world. Okay, that actually, you know, quite absurd, because most of them came here in the early part of the 20th century because they were looking for jobs, they were looking for work. And the Jews who were coming back into the land and who were returning and rebuilding the land of Israel were creating an economy. And so these people, the Arabs, were able to get jobs. And ultimately, in the late 60s, they started calling themselves Palestinians so that people will relate to them as a long-deprived nation. It's all a hoax. It's all a hoax, Jim.
But the fanning of the flames of that hoax are taking place worldwide.
Absolutely, absolutely. The world was very happy to have that narrative play out because let's face it, you know, Europe is where the 6 million Jews were killed. There are a lot of Europeans, you know, who are closet anti-Semites, and they're more than happy to see Israel being given all of this grief from these basically from these Muslims, you know, and their terrorist organizations.
David, I understand that today the Knesset had given preliminary approval to a bill that would allow Israel to hold the bodies of terrorists rather than return them to their families. What's the backstory to this? Why would Israel take such action?
Well, maybe because every time that in every war that we've had, when Israeli soldiers lose their lives, and or are taken prisoner by Israel's enemies, by these Islamic terrorist organizations, they never return the bodies. There are several bodies of Israeli soldiers who were killed in the last war, and they're not allowed to. Those bodies are not being transported back to Israel for burial. So we're going to play the same game.
I understand.
It's unfortunate, but when you're dealing with terrorist organizations, you can't be humane.
And often I understand, too, that bodies going back to the Arab nations, that they serve as a catalyst for even more terrorism.
Yes, absolutely. They don't need excuses to promote terrorism. And they've been doing it for decades, for centuries. And you know, we don't have to do anything. What we do will not change the situation. It won't get them to love us.
David Rubin with us today in Israel. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewtimes.com. Many evangelicals, pastors, police departments, sheriff departments, and even national security agencies are engaging in interfaith dialogue with known jihadis through the Muslim Brotherhood organization. Perhaps they should remember what one Muslim Brotherhood leader said at a convention in 1996. He said, quote, "It depends on me and you. Either we do it now, or we do it after 100 years. But this country will become a Muslim country. And I think if we are outside this country, we can say, oh Allah, destroy America. But once we are here, our mission in this country is to change it." End quote. There you see, my friends, Muslim Brotherhood, in the early 1900s, that took part in the Holocaust of Adolf Hitler, has admitted they want to turn America into a Muslim nation. Pray tell, why are Americans engaging them in a strategy of interfaith dialogue?
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. David Rubin is our guest here today. He is in Israel as we speak and giving us a perspective from within the nation. And we're talking about a number of things, from the president's declaration last month to the vice president's trip this very week to certainly the negotiations or the certainly the prodding for change to take place in the so-called nuclear deal, the Iran deal, and talking about a number of issues. I just want to give one more opportunity. If you'd like to call in today, our number is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. David's website, we've talked about some of his books that he has written, The Islamic Tsunami, Peace for Peace in the New Middle East, and More Sparks from Zion. You'll find out about those at davidrubinisrael.com, davidrubinisrael.com, and more about the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund at shilohisraelchildren.org. That's shilohisraelchildren.org. David, we've been seeing that Israel has been locating more of the Hamas tunnels. Tell us what's happening there.
Well, the tunnels have been built in recent years secretly by the Hamas terrorist organization in Gaza. And the tunnels are designed to smuggle terrorists into Israel from Gaza, and to do so secretly, and to create as much havoc as possible, and kill as many Jews as possible. They make no bones about it. When they talk in Arabic, they say it very clearly. So what can be done about that? Basically, that whole network of tunnels that they've built it needs to be destroyed. It needs to be totally wiped out. And then at some point Israel is going to have to go back into Gaza and take all their weapons. Okay, and that's what I've been recommending for years. Just destroy all of their tunnels, take all of their weapons, and put an end to this madness.
Let's go to Greg, who's calling from Wisconsin. Greg, you're on the air.
Yes, I thought it important to mention to the radio listeners that as a Christian, which I proclaim to be as a Christian, it's important for us not to necessarily side with any particular religion other than ours, including Islam or Judaism. And I think it's a very valid point. It seems like these days in America, we have a love affair with the nation of Israel to the exclusion of other nations.
Well, yeah, one of the things we're encouraged in Scripture, David, is to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We don't really see that regarding other cities that are named, and also we do see the promise that God gave to Abraham, that it was through Abraham that all the nations of the earth would be blessed, and that went from Abraham to Isaac and to Jacob. Certainly, we ought to be a peace-loving nation to all nations, but I believe there's also a very vested interest in Israel itself. Any comment on that, David?
Yes, of course. I think we have to remember that George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Abraham Lincoln, Harry Truman, we could go on and on with the list. All of these great American leaders, and the ones that I've named have mostly been the founding fathers and presidents, but even more modern leaders like Martin Luther King, these leaders always recognized not just religion in some sort of generic way, but Judeo-Christian heritage. Mm-hmm. And, Christianity comes from a certain root, and that root is Judaism in the Old Testament. And it never once mentions Islam in the Old Testament, and it never once mentions Jerusalem in the Quran. But Jerusalem is mentioned 700 times in the Bible. So the Bible that the Christians read as well. Jesus was not a Muslim. And frankly, Jesus was not a Christian. He was a Jew. But that is the root of Christianity. And so it's important to, for one to know his roots. You know, the caller's roots is not Islam. And the caller's root is not Hinduism. Okay, I got the impression that he's a Christian. So, it's important to know from where your heritage derives. And if you love the Bible and you love Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob from the Bible, then and that root of your faith, then you have to love the Jewish people. It kind of goes hand in hand.
Greg, thank you so much for your inquiry on that issue. And as you talked about Jesus here, certainly we have the very birth of the Christian church, where believers were first called Christians then at Antioch, but ushered in through Jesus Christ. We have David calling from Milwaukee. You're on the air, David.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for the knowledge of Israel. I always say, if people ask me if God is real, I say God is the God of Israel. Well, Paul, the converted Jew, shared God's first law of evangelism. He says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, the Messiah, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first." I think we have to take this knowledge, and every one of us has to take a look in our hearts. What are we doing to reach those people that are Jews that need the gospel?
Thank you, David, for your comments. And quickly from Wheeling, West Virginia, James, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just wondering if the root of all this is pointed out in the scripture in 1 Thessalonians 2:15. It says they killed even the Lord Jesus and the prophets, and now they persecute us. Furthermore, they are not pleasing to God, and they are hostile to all of humanity. I wonder if that's the reason there's such problems in the Middle East. Thank you.
Thank you for your call here. David, we know since the very early days of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, there's been turmoil.
Yep, there certainly has been.
David Rubin with us. The website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, DavidRubinIsrael.com. David, thanks for staying up and being with us on the broadcast.
You're welcome.
And, folks, thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.